The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Howard, I would never be Louis and make you say Goran's name.
I know, I realized I said we're going to talk to Louis, but Louis was on my mind because he was making me say terrible things. apologies, Anthony Reich. The IDF has completed its investigation into the botched raid in Gaza last year in November that led to the death of a senior officer. What's been made public about this investigation and its findings?
So I think there are a few things which are quite interesting about the investigation. Just to remind people, this was this raid that was happening undercover in the area of Khan Yunis in the Gaza Strip. And it actually all took place on the 11th of November, exactly when Prime Minister Netanyahu was in Paris. And he came back very quickly. He was there to mark the end of the war together with all the international leaders, and for people who remember, they were marking the end of the First World War. There was this commemoration in Paris, and he had to cut short his visit and return in light of the events that happened in Gaza and Khan Yunis on that day. And it turns out that there were soldiers from the IDF, senior soldiers, and of course, combat soldiers who were very well trained, for this, from the Sayeret Matkal Brigade. And, unfortunately, they became exposed. And as a result of that, the senior lieutenant general, whose name still is not being made known in public now already, something like 7 months later, his name is still not being put in the press, even though in the social media network, of course, his name was made known. But at the moment, officially, his name is still being concealed. But he was killed, and it resulted in a whole barrage of rockets being fired towards Israel. First of all, something like a dozen rockets were fired on the Sunday night when this particular event took place. And then the following day, on the Monday, something like 80 rockets were fired towards Israel. There was people who were severely injured. A bus was hit as part of the rockets that were fired. So this was a very, very serious incident. And I think what's important for us also to recognize is that the IDF does, of course, carry out investigations into these incidents. And to some degree, the results have been made public, because I think that, you know, whatever we're being told, it just represents very much the tip of the iceberg in terms of all the other things that would have gone on in that investigation, which are not being made public. But what we do know now is that that lieutenant colonel apparently was killed by friendly fire, not by fire from Gaza militants, as was originally understood. Mm. And in fact, there were, I think, 7 Gaza militants who were killed in that particular incident, including a very, very senior person. And this is what really created the instability at the time, because all of a sudden there was a view that perhaps the Israeli government were going after senior people, as they had done as a policy previously. This was not the case. It was just all circumstantial, because once the IDF soldiers had been outed, had been found in that particular situation in Khan Yunis, there was a very significant rescue operation that was launched in order to try and extract them as quickly as possible. And as part of that, unfortunately, there were people who were killed there. That was not the intention. And it seems as if this lieutenant colonel was one of the casualties of that friendly fire. I think the most important thing that we learn from this investigation is really the support that goes on for these undercover operations. Of course, mistakes will be made. We have to expect that mistakes will be made. Unexpected things will happen. Fortunately, when the IDF goes about these operations, they do it successfully in the most part, and we don't hear about it in the news, and it doesn't result in any drama. They just go about their work quietly. They get it done and they come out and nobody has to hear about it. Mm. So when we hear about these stories, obviously they're the ones that go wrong. But I think in this particular situation, we see how much support and cover there is for these investigations when they're in place. Because at the moment that it went wrong, a huge rescue effort was launched. The helicopters were there, the support units were there, and I think that this is where the Chief of General Staff, Aviv Kochavi, made his comments, and he said that the rescuers excelled themselves in rescuing the remaining soldiers who were left in a very compromising situation. And of course, lessons have been learned. I'm sure many lessons have been learned. Interestingly, two senior IDF officers have already been casualties of this particular botched up operation. They were not fired, but they just decided to leave their posts of their own accord, including the commander of the Sayeret Matkal Brigade, which was a very, very unexpected and unusual event. It's been 20 years since a senior officer in his situation decided of his own accord to resign and move on to do other things. And that's what happened with this particular commander, as well as another senior IDF commander who was the deputy in charge of the IDF's intelligence unit, and he also of his own volition decided to leave his post as a result of this particular operation. So there have been casualties, even though they weren't formally fired, but they have left their posts, and they've certainly been casualties as a result of this particular raid. So hopefully the lessons have been learned, and hopefully the IDF will continue to undertake such undercover operations, but more successfully in the future.
Yeah, I just wish that, I mean, after all that, I just wish they would change the term friendly fire, because it's just such a misnomer, because, you know, people still die, whether it's friendly or not. Former Prime Minister Ehud Barak announces the name of his new political party. How's the new name being received?
Well, with a little bit of controversy, I would say, because Ehud Barak's new party in Hebrew is called Yisrael Demokratit, which literally means democratic Israel. But he's asked in English that the name be called the Israel Democratic Party. And that is officially the name, which I think is no great shakes. And some people feel that the inclusion of this democracy word is important, because it allows Ehud Barak to say you can have a democratic Israel, or you can have a Netanyahu Israel, to try to set off the fact that people are really gunning for Netanyahu as opposed to trying to present themselves. But the real controversy has come not from within Israel, but indeed from the U.S., where the members of the American Democratic Party feel that this is a little confusing, and that people might well associate the U.S. Democratic Party with Barak's Israel Democratic Party. And so there have been a few Democrats from the U.S. who have been less than impressed with being associated with Ehud Barak's party, as it turns out. But I don't think that there's anything that stops him from calling his party that name in Israel. I don't think it contravenes any copyrights or any limitations that might be in place. But I think the real issue is, where is Israel Democratic Party going to go in the elections? At the moment, the polls have suggested that he might win 4 seats, which is really the minimum that he could win if indeed he manages to exceed the minimum number of votes required in order to even have any representation in the Knesset at all. And what we understand is that the new Labour leader, Amir Peretz, has already made some motions and made some approaches towards Barak and to his Israel Democratic Party in an attempt to try somehow to forge a bond between the two of them, given, of course, that Barak comes from the Labour Party movement, where he was, when he was previously Prime Minister, he was a Labour Party leader at the time. And so, obviously, it seems logical for Amir Peretz to approach him to try somehow to bolster both of their efforts, because both the Labour Party and, indeed, now the Israel Democratic Party are not assured of representation in the next Knesset. And if they do get together, then perhaps as a combined force, they might have more of a chance of sitting in the next Knesset, if indeed the elections do go ahead. And at the moment, I have to be honest and tell you, I've no idea whether we are going to have an election in September or not. But at the moment, that particular argument seems to have been parked, and we are proceeding as if though that election indeed will take place, and there's nothing to suggest now that there are many efforts in order to somehow avoid that election taking place.
Yeah, there seems to be a very, very, you know, almost sad and anachronistic approach from Israel's left, you know, between Barak and Peretz. Like, it's just, it's so unfresh, it's so stale, in fact, that you just wonder if anybody can really be inspired by it.
The message that we're getting from most of the political parties, whether they come from the left of the political spectrum or indeed from the center, because if you have a look at the Kahol Levan party, for example, even though they've been dumped in, you know, the small in the left wing bucket, in order for the Netanyahu camp to try to somehow label them and therefore try to oppose them. Even when you look at all of these parties, they are all got one thing in common. And the thing that they have in common is an attempt to try to unseat Prime Minister Netanyahu. And in fact, many of the parties have even gone as far as saying they would be prepared to sit with Likud in the government. So they are not presenting their platform as being unique, that they have a completely different approach to the politics of Israel. It's all about Netanyahu. Benny Gantz and Yair Lapid have both said that they would sit with the Likud if it wasn't for Netanyahu. Ehud Barak, or at least his deputy Yair Golan, has made a comment that they would be prepared to sit with Likud if it was not for Netanyahu. So there doesn't seem to be any fresh politics or any fresh policies going on in terms of the way that these parties are presenting themselves. It's all about the Netanyahu factor and trying somehow to unseat Prime Minister Netanyahu. And that's really what this election is all about.
Yeah, which is a very sad, also sad way to run an election, because it's not about hope. It's not about governance. It's really not about policy. It's really just about trying to unseat one person, which always worries me, in terms of a strategy. We don't have a lot of time, but can you just tell us very quickly about the protest that took place yesterday after a daycare owner was found to have abused children in her care?
So this was a very, very shocking revelation that took place last week, where camera footage, video footage was released showing children being abused within a daycare center in the area of Rosh Ha'ayin in the central part of Israel, and a huge outcry against this particular event, against the daycare owner herself, who's shown on the video to be committing acts which are really, really not appropriate or acceptable against these children. And of course, then what transpired over the weekend was that fire was set to her personal apartment, where she also ran the daycare center from. That's also not okay, people taking the law into their own hands. And of course, yesterday, parents coming out demonstrating on the streets against the daycare owner, because I think what we're seeing here is a lot of revenge, a lot of anger being felt by parents who have children who go to Poatonim, to daycares, from a very, very young age, and people feeling vulnerable, parents feeling vulnerable that their children may well be abused. And I think it's all about Israeli culture and society, where we have to understand that most mothers are forced to go back to work from an economic point of view in order to make a living, to send very, very young children, sometimes only 3 months old, to daycare to be looked after. You see many grandmothers walking around the streets looking after children, not only their own grandchildren, but potentially other people's children as well, in order to try and somehow arrange childcare. It's a completely different culture. The cost of childcare is enormous. There's no control over who is entitled to look after children. Anybody can just set up in their own home to look after children, and there's no controls over that. And I think that we need now to see a system where there is more control and more supervision over children who are being looked after in daycare centers. Of course, there is a cost to that, and the cost is the big issue, how much it costs for these children to be looked after. So there is a real dilemma at the moment as to what the right route is to avoid children being abused, but also to have the proper checks and balances in place that children are properly looked after.
Absolutely. Terrible, terrible subject matter indeed. 801, Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll chat to you tomorrow, same time, same place. Apologies that your news is slightly late.